Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Radio Boston, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And we're going to begin today with the vexing question of how to respond to the violence in the streets of some Boston neighborhoods.
Mayor Marty Walsh has made this his top priority. And one of the measures he's pushing for is a gun buyback program.
Critics say buybacks don't work. But today, the mayor told WBUR that his buyback program will be different.
He said it will include safety education and outreach to parents. And he dismissed claims that gun buybacks are useless.
I don't know, maybe some of those people have too much time on their hands to be critical of the program. The programs, it's again, you get a gun off the street, nobody knows if that gun potentially would have been used down the road for a shooting. So, I mean, I don't govern by listening to what the critics say. I govern by what I think is effective in hearing other people.
Joining us now to talk about buybacks and how effective they actually are is David Kennedy, director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. He also directed the Boston Gun Project's Operation Ceasefire in the 1990s. David, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, good afternoon.
And I want to start by putting the question to you in a very straightforward way. In your view, are gun buyback programs effective?
There's a pretty universal consensus among both academics and law enforcement professionals that no, they don't work.
And why is that? What are the reasons?
Well, the main thing is that there are very, very few people in any jurisdiction who are at any meaningful risk of shooting you. And they are exceptional people. They're typically very high-rate criminal offenders. They're mostly members of gangs and drug crews and neighborhood sets and things like that. And what we really need is to keep them away from guns, and when we have buybacks, they don't give their guns up.
So who is turning in guns if buybacks, if not that profile?
They mostly turn out to be people, pretty ordinary people, who are fundamentally cleaning out their closets. What you get are overwhelmingly older, often extremely old guns. A lot of them are not functional anymore, and there's some very clear academic analysis that shows when you look at the streams of guns that end up on the streets in the hands of people who hurt other people with them, those are not the guns that go to those places.
What do we know about any correlation between gun buybacks and reductions in rates of crime? Is there any connection?
There doesn't seem to be, no.
So if there are so many reasons that gun buybacks don't seem to work, why do we see so many of them?
I think a couple of reasons. So one is you have to delve pretty deeply into the nature of the street scene and gun trafficking and gun diversion and such before the reason that they don't work makes sense. It makes all kinds of sense that if you can just, in general, get guns off the street and out of people's houses, that it would help with crime. And that's not right in terms of gun buybacks, but it seems like it should be true.
But elaborate on that if you would, because that is a major argument, that any gun taken out of circulation is a good thing in the bigger picture effort to reduce the number of guns in U.S. homes that could be used to hurt someone. So why is that not a good thing?
So there are something like 250 million firearms in the United States, and the reduction in those guns or in any place, even a city like Boston, which doesn't have a particularly high rate of civilian gun ownership, the number of guns that buybacks remove from that overall pool is rounding error. It just doesn't make any difference statistically or operationally.
So the dent is small, basically.
The dent is invisible, yeah.
So David Kennedy, you know that some people say that buybacks at least have intangible value. Maybe they keep gun violence prevention top of mind for people. Maybe they rally a community. Do you think there's at least a symbolic benefit?
I think the symbolic benefit is actually one of the reasons that we shouldn't do them. And this is the way arguments about preventing serious violence often go, which is that you have a crisis, as Boston is looking at right now. We say people are killing each other out there. We have to do something about it. Somebody proposes something that on further analysis clearly won't work, and then we say, but it's symbolically important. And what we're saying is we know it's not going to work, but we're going to do it anyway because it kind of feels good. And in fact, that is a distraction. It's a waste of effort. It's energy that could be put into something that will work, and it is a red herring.
Do you see any scenario where a buyback could be designed better or differently? And in that case, you might support them.
Nobody's been able to come up with anything that seems to address their inherent drawbacks. And people say, well, let's raise the bounty so that we get more guns. And what turns out to happen then is people will, for instance, buy guns cheap and then bring them in and make money on them at buybacks. Some of the research says people who have guns in the house will turn in some of their guns, the ones they don't want, but not the ones they do. They'll keep those. Some of it even says that people will turn their guns in, get the remittance, and use it to go off and get a better gun. So it is just not a fundamentally decent approach.
There's a woman in Boston who's a very powerful voice in terms of trying to get guns off the street and reduce violence. And she says that even though buybacks, you know, she feels like they have mixed value, but overall she says they don't address the larger issue as to why some young people feel that they want to pick up a gun or why they do pick up a gun and kill someone. So I guess the gigantic question here in the 30 seconds or so we have left is, if not buybacks, what do you think works to prevent gun violence?
The best thing is the approach that Boston pioneered for the world back in the mid-1990s. It worked beautifully, and the city seems willing to do anything but go back and get it right again.
The so-called Boston miracle you're referring to.
Yeah.
In 10 seconds, tell us what the city needs to do that, bring together clergy, community.
It's very simple. It's the gang members and the drug crew guys who shoot people. All ceasefire was sitting down with them saying, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, we'll help you if you let us, and if anybody in your crew shoots somebody, the criminal justice authorities are coming after the whole crew. That's it. It's really, really straightforward.
That's David Kennedy. He's director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. You can read more about Boston's gun buyback program at radioboston.org. And David, thank you very much.
You bet.
The other big story that we're keeping track of today is that winter storm. And joining us now is WBUR's meteorologist, David Epstein. David, looking out the window just before we went on the air, it's really coming down. What are you seeing out there?
Well, we're still seeing the heavy bands of snow continuing here, especially in the immediate Boston area. But off towards the west, it's beginning to lighten up significantly, and that's going to be the trend over the next hour or so. We'll watch the back edge of the heaviest snow pull off towards the northeast. So places south of Boston have seen a lot of rain over Cape Cod through New Bedford, just to the east of Providence and down through the Plymouth area. But in the Boston area, the precipitation came down so hard during the, say, noon to 3 o'clock hour, it pulled cold air down from above, and that's why it changed over to snow in Boston after being rained for several hours this morning.
I see. So you're saying it's going to lighten up, meaning it's going to turn to rain or pretty much stop snowing as the evening commute really gets underway?
Well, as the evening commute gets underway, we'll watch the snow either end or change over to rain. And the rain's not going to come down terribly hard, but we will see some rain. So one of the things I'm advising folks to do if you're home and you're listening is you want to get out now and begin to shovel, because it's only going to get heavier and wetter through the evening. We don't have a lot of rain coming up this evening. There will be showers, and at times there'll be a heavier downpour, especially in eastern Massachusetts. But in general, the evening hours are going to see light precipitation, light freezing drizzle or a little bit of light rain.
And what does it look like for tomorrow morning, David?
So we have the backlash snow from the storm. As the storm pulls up into the Gulf of Maine, there'll be a little wedge of snow that rotates around it and moves through the Berkshires and especially northern Worcester County. It could clip the Boston area tomorrow morning. So for the morning commute, there could be a little bit of light snow, perhaps coating the ground during the first couple of hours of the morning commute, but we're not expecting anything major. And then we get the sunshine out in the afternoon and temperatures will be above freezing, so you get a chance to clean things up. It's not like we're going to have a flash freeze after this goes by.
All right, some good news there. That's WBUR meteorologist David Epstein with the latest on that winter storm. David, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. Coming up, Mayor Marty Walsh takes on income inequality in Boston. But what policies actually work, and what can a mayor really do? I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.